You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Kaylin Carr. Another night of the Audi 2020 MLS Cup playoffs. Another night past midnight. Another night with our best friend, the Brown. Keep us going here on these late nights, these delirious nights, these wonderful nights. Three games tonight, of course, the top seeds in the Eastern Conference going down. And the Seattle Sounders going right back to where we expected them to be, which is right back to MLS Cup, it seems. They are now officially the favorites. Wow. We're going to talk to Matt Turner. We're going to talk to Dax McCarty again because Nashville did it again. And Charlie Davies is not here to answer for that, though he picked it. So, I mean, he's played like the ultimate mind game with everybody on this one. How are your Audi bracket challenges right now, by the way? Mine's busted. Mine's kablooey. It's like, it's basically like every single March for me. I pick Kansas to go all the way. And then after the second round, I'm just like twiddling my thumbs. I had the Union. That didn't work out for me very well. Now, did it? How's it going for you guys? How are your predictions?
I had Philly in the final as well. I thought I went fairly boldish and got Columbus in an Eastern Conference final. False. I chickened out at the last second and put Toronto in that game. So my bracket is officially done forever. Thank you.
I'm doing okay on the West Coast. I lost the Portland one, but otherwise I'm doing all right on the West. On the East, I did have New England over Philly.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. But I also had Toronto going back to MLS Cup. I had another Seattle-Toronto matchup in MLS Cup. So that's out the window. I'm not gonna.
And you had Toronto winning it too.
That's what I did, yeah.
But we're all the better for that. I did not want another Seattle Toronto, so this works out. Mine may be busted, but I'm willing to sacrifice myself so that we don't have to endure the same thing over and over and over.
I think at a certain point of every MLS Cup playoffs, you begin to just throw it out the window and you say, I picked the Sounders to win it all. I feel good about that. The rest of the bracket, it's who cares? There's nothing left. It's all meaningless. I just think, it's there. Tonight was a night where everything kind of went a little bit haywire. The playoffs overall have been wild and unexpected, but generally it seemed like the teams you would have expected found a way to win. This went the other direction, most notably with the Supporter Shield winners. Philly for me. That was a big shock for me.
Kaylin, I told you on the pregame, the Rebs with Carlos Heel are a completely different team. You didn't listen. I saw you.
I didn't. You've been talking up the Supporter Shield all year, or the last decade, so I figured it actually would mean something when it came to the playoffs.
But you need to
apparently not. So was I right in the end? I don't know.
Well, the thing is that back in the day, Doyle was he's a Red Bulls Metro Stars guy, so he kind of understands the connection between Supporter Shield and then not getting it done at this moment.
When I rooted for that team, they didn't win.
Nothing's changed. All right, let's get into it. We do have the schedule now going into the conference semifinals. We have four teams in each conference standing on Sunday. You have the Eastern Conference, Orlando, New England on ABC at 3 p.m. Eastern. Columbus and Nashville are going to do their thing on ESPN at 8 p.m. Eastern. Then on Tuesday, Seattle, Dallas, FS1, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Then Wednesday is Sporting Kansas City, Minnesota, also on FS1 at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can go ESPN Deportes on all those, the ones that are on ABC and ESPN. Fox Deportes on the Tuesday and Wednesday games on FS1. Then, of course, TSN and TVA up in Canada have all of these games. Before we get to Dax, before we get to Matt Turner, let's talk about this game we just finished watching. Here is we burn the midnight oil on the East Coast. Seattle are the favorites now. I think you can say that without any doubt in your voice or in your mind.
You are all SKC's, the number one seed. Don't disrespect
it. No.
The number
no.
one seed still in, and now Seattle's the favorite?
No, come
because
on.
Because Toronto lost in the East?
I was inside the castle.
If you're starting Shane O'Neill in the playoffs, you're the favorite. That's just the way it's
done. I was inside a besieged castle, and you and Charlie and everybody else were on the outside just chucking boulders at me. I was just trying to defend myself and defend my family's, somebody who I know's city. I just had to defend Sporting Kansas City, but it's Seattle. Come on. Regular season, throw it out the window. When we get to this point, it is the Sounders. They're the favorites now. 3-1 against LAFC. Now, LAFC, of course, did not have half their squad, thanks to what ESPN reported as COVID and what we've heard from many others, whether that's Diego Rossi or Brian Rodriguez or Cifuentes or Palacios, all of them out. Regardless, even if they had been there, I don't know if Carlos Vela, despite missing a PK and the rest, are able to overcome Nico and Jordan and Roru Diaz and Jao Paulo and the Roldan brothers and everyone else who comes out in our gamers for the Sounders team.
But Weeby, they were favorites to begin with.
I know.
Going into the playoffs. And like when you see Portland, the way they were banged up, Sporting, yes, the top seed, but you know, really had to fight against, San Jose to even find a way through. And then now you see the Supporter Shield winners, Philly going out, Toronto going out, Orlando going without Gallese. I mean, this is lined up pretty. I mean, I would say you can't say anything in MLS Cup playoffs is straightforward, but I felt better about the Sounders and picked them to begin with. And you have to say, coming out of this week, how much better and clearer path it is forward for them to go back and defend their title.
Kaylin, if I give you the Sounders versus the field right now, who are you taking?
Sounders, yeah. Yeah. But I probably would have taken that to begin with in the playoffs based on everything I've seen. Like, I mean, even on top of it, I thought for, especially when you look at tonight's match, I thought especially the places where LAFC have been weak or have been hurt in the past has been at that, in that back line and specifically on that right-hand side. And when you look at some of the Sounder strengths, most notably Jordan Morris, and the way they were able to kind of stretch them out, if you look at the first goal, it goes, they begin to move side to side. Roy Diaz comes across, plays it across to the back post, and then you see Jordan lay it back to, guess who, Ladero. And then later on, I mean, the one that ended up clinching it for, you know, for sure was Jordan getting in behind again. I mean, he just makes this attack just so much more dynamic, that threat in behind and the composure. I mean, whether it's the outside of the right foot, the left foot, whatever it is, I mean, even the pass that he has through that Ladero almost scores that goes off the post, it's a brilliant pass. I mean, I think he's been one of the best players in MLS this season. And when it comes to playoff time, he seems to always find another level in his game.
He's better than Carlos Vela.
He is, yeah. And I said that before the game too, that I thought Vela was just, look, not his best, which is still better than most and still better than almost anybody else in the league, but just lacking a little bit of game sharpness. I thought this game came a little bit too early for LAFC.
Did Kaylin just freeze?
Yeah, Kaylin did. Game sharpness is what he was going to say. I mean, he's had a very serious face now.
Anders was like, he's talking about LAFC too much.
Yeah, mute him. I was going to say, for Anders, is just, he's got to be feeling very satisfied right now. To watch this with Produce and Anders is sort of a lesson in endurance, I would say. you have to get through it and you have to endure a lot. What did they show you tonight against, look, honestly, a banged up LAFC side, Doyle, that makes you believe, as Kaylin returns to
you
us?
You have to point out, Seattle was missing three starters in this game.
Oh, fair.
Right? Seattle was arguably missing more starters in this than LAFC were.
So that is this was a show of their depth, their ability to beat teams in different ways. I don't know if that's true, but from different people. Lodero's just pure ability to cover every inch of the field and be a factor at all times.
He's amazing.
And Kaylin mentioned Jordan Morris taking it to another level in the playoffs, but Rui Diaz, I think Rui Diaz is one of the two or three best in the box strikers in MLS. But when he steps outside the box and creates chances like he did for the Lodero goal, then he puts himself into another stratosphere. And that's what he did last year in the postseason. And he did it again this year.
Guys, he has played 7 postseason games. He has 8 goals and 6 assists in 7 postseason games. That's a career. If you had that as a lead the line number 9 for a good team over the course of 10 years, you'd be like, that guy has a really nice playoff resume. He's done that in 2.5 years. It's insane.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. And Jaimar has been huge for them to allow them to only give up one goal against an opponent, starting Shane O'Neill at center back. A lot of that falls to his ability to hold that back line up. Nuhu made a couple of mistakes. Alex Roldan starts at right back. So it was a whole change in mishmash, whatever it is, hodgepodge. And Jaimar is able to hold a lot of it together for them, which is huge for Seattle.
So I thought the big thing was going to be the lack of Gustav Svensson in central midfield, because he was with Sweden, captain Sweden this past week, and then wasn't able to get back in time to play this game and get out of quarantine. It pushed Christian Roldan back into central midfield. And Anders, let's run that clip, if you have it queued up, the first goal that Seattle scored. And this right here shows so much of what Christian Roldan is good at. Watch his reaction as the ball is turned over. He's two steps faster than Latif Blessing and Marc-Anthony Kay. Then he makes a hard direct run and occupies three LAFC defenders that completely opens the top of the box for Ladero. It also gives Morris a little bit of room to hit that pullback and put it right on Ladero's foot. Seattle's ability to lose guys like Svensson, like Nierdam, like Arriaga, and still function at a level like this, it's remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable. And I'm with Kalen, man. You give me Sounders versus the field right now, I'm taking the Sounders.
Remember, we are on YouTube as well after all of these nights of playoff action. So if you want to see what Doyle is talking about instead of imagining it, just come hang out with us at 1:04 a.m. Eastern time. Yeah. If you're on the Pacific Coast, you're good. If you're on
crazy thing with the internet where you could watch it later.
Yes.
That's give us the download and the video view.
Yeah.
Whoa. It's beautiful.
I said this during the game. We were joking around talking, but Christian Roldan's going to be in every U.S. national team camp from here on out because he plays three positions at a minimum. He loves the team. He works hard. All the things you want on a guy to make a roster. Like, he is a 18 to 23 tournament roster player at his core. And I think he's going to captain Seattle Sounders at some point. Like, he's been there. He's done everything for this team. He's gotten better every single year he's been there. And he continues to step up every time he has to play right back. He does that for a segment. Then he gets back into central midfield. Then they ask him to play right midfield. He does that at a high level. In a playoff game, you need him to start back at central midfield. He does that at a high level. He has done everything Seattle has asked of him.
And it's worth it to contextualize it again. Seattle was without Gustav Svensson, who captained the Sweden national team in an international this past. Like, that's a legit top 15 or 20 team in the world. Their captain plays for the Seattle Sounders. He was not able to play in this game. Christian Roldan just slides back into that. He's been playing winger all year. He slides right back into central midfield, and he breaks the game open by winning a 50-50 and then making just a perfect cerebral run that opens up the game. And once it was 1-0, you had one more moment of doubt when Stefan Fry makes the save on the penalty. And then it felt like it was all Seattle at that point.
What do you see from Jordan Morris right now, Kalen? Like, this is the sort of game where he's at his absolute best. And this is when I say and think to myself, God, this guy's unstoppable. I mean, there are times when he looks more human, but in a game like this, it just looks inevitable. He's going to get two goals. He's going to set up three or four huge chances. His ability with the pullbacks over the last year and a half, 2 years. I mean, he is not only one of the best goal scorers in open space in MLS, but now he's one of the best chance creators as well. I mean, it's so hard to contain him.
Yeah, the development in his game over the years has been amazing. I think he had a lot of innate qualities to begin with. You know, obviously, most notably the speed and ability. Where I think, you know, early on, he jumps off the page, and you're like, this guy is very unique and could play against any competition in the world and give them legit problems. But you would say maybe as a super sub in certain situations, then it was like, no, it's a starter. And then it was like, if he just adds the finishing piece, and then the finishing piece came, and then the clutch piece came in the playoffs. And then now it's gotten to the point where I feel like it's, you know, he makes the right decisions all the time, whether it's to go one-on-one, drag it to the end line, to cut inside, to lay it off, to find the back post and finish with both feet. So you're like, well, what's next for this guy? And I look at it, and he landed a little bit in an in-between generation of sorts, where now you see all of the young players that have gone abroad and are playing in Champions League football and all that. And like, Jordan Morris could do that. I mean, he is of that quality and can play at that level, no doubt. He's just in a good situation where it's like, why would you stop this right now? You're scoring goals, you're winning titles, you're doing it, you're pushing on, and his level is improving as well too. I do wonder at some point, just for the national team, is he curious? Like, how many more titles? And it's a bit premature right now because, you know, I think he's in the middle of another title run, what looks like to be another one right now. But I just can't help but watch him and see it's starting to look, he's dominant right now. It's dominant. And I'm like, well, what's the next level for this guy? Because he's still 25 years old. And I think there's scarily, there's still another level for him to come. It's been amazing.
Remember when Landon went to Everton on loan and like he won player of the month, two months in a row at Everton, and he like led them in assists for the year despite only playing for two. It feels like Jordan Morris could end up having that kind of loan to a team either in Germany or maybe the Premier League at some point. But for now, like, you hit it. He keeps raising his level, and he did it for the national team last year as well. And it's not just putting up numbers. It's finishing with his left foot. It's hitting passes that I had no idea were in his bag. It's changing his body shape as he receives the ball to be a little bit more, throw defenders off a little bit more, more elusive rather than just speed and power. And it's been fun to watch. And he deserves a ton of credit for becoming this type of player, because it would have been very easy for him to be like, no, I'm just going to be a straight line guy. And he still would have been like a 12 goal a year type of player.
By the way, this guy did his ACL and yeah. That's a pretty serious injury. But for a player he's still blowing people off the page on the pitch. And I think, you know, just from having gone through this myself and having a bit of pace at some point, that like, I felt like the best part of my career came afterwards. And a part of that was because you just gain this different perspective. And even if it's like, you don't need to beat a guy by 20 yards, you might beat him by, in his case, 10, my mind, maybe 2.5. But like, I mean, I think he's got a level of like understanding, or the game has slowed down for him some. At least from a mental perspective, whereas the physical attributes are definitely still there.
Meanwhile, he has a teammate, Nico Adero, who at whatever his age is, I mean, 30 plus whatever, what, he's 32, 33 now? Is that where he's at?
31.
I mean, it doesn't matter. He's ageless. I mean, the amount of running he does, we've talked about on this show, he led the league in distance covered per game. It seemed like at the end of the regular season, maybe he had lost just a little bit in the tank, and then that was not the case.
But it's not. It's Seattle. Seattle took their foot off the gas for about 6 weeks to close out the season. They had a really strong run out of a poor MLS's back tournament to kind of reestablish themselves, and then they just relaxed. And what's amazing about what this club has done over the last few years is no one was panicked about it. No one talked about it. No one cared, because you knew what happened tonight would happen. And to Kalen's point, you knew Seattle was going to come in and they were going to be comfortable in the playoffs. And they were going to hit the ground running and they were going to play the way they wanted to play. And it was the entire club, because Jordan Morris, the same. He was on most people's best 11s, and he also went quiet over the last 6 or so weeks. Rui Diaz had to go away for internationals. You didn't see as much from him. All of these things happen, and then this team hit the ground running today immediately, and it doesn't matter for them. They know exactly what the moment is. They know exactly what they want to do. And it's amazing, because they can do it year after year when most teams couldn't do that once.
But they did it in a different way too. And the shift for me was like, there was a lot of conversation last year where it was like, well, Seattle can't go down to LAFC and play an open match. And some of that got turned into a whole other thing of like, should they, whatever that means. And it was like, but I thought if this game got stretched and went open, you were going to see that wasn't going to be a good recipe for LAFC. I thought the Sounders would blow that one out. And when you look at the way LAFC came out and played, they were a little bit more in a mid block. They weren't necessarily full out, you know, the general high press LAFC system where we see them just swarming teams and going from there, and they were going to go. And that was a different situation from last year to this year. And I think a part of it came down to just the health and overall state of where LAFC is right now, and the attack, especially of Sounders and how they were on all cylinders, basically.
Well, before we preview the Seattle-Dallas game and get on, of course, to Philly's loss and New England's triumph and Nashville doing their thing and proving everybody wrong again, let's talk LAFC real quick. I mean, they were hamstrung. That much has been clear for basically a week and a half as they dealt with all the sort of, you know, all the issues they had with guys going on international duty and being not medically cleared to play for this game. So Christian Torres, the youngest player to start an MLS playoff game, gets to start for Bob Bradley. And Dave, you made a joke during the game as we're watching. Yeah, you know, it was like he's just an observation. You called his game last year and it was U15s. Is that what you said? I mean, U15s, that says a lot.
2019, I called a U15 game with Christian Torres playing and Eric Duenas, who played for LAFC.
They call U15 games? That's
Now you do, Kaylin. What channel is that on? You know why, Kaylin? Because within 12 months, they're playing in MLS.
I was
going
to say, geez.
Locked in.
Respect. Play your kids.
Yeah.
What happened here for LAFC, Doyle? I mean, what should Bob Bradley take from this? Is this a big disappointment, or is this sort of just a... Man, I mean, that's just kind of the way the cookie crumbled in 2020 for us.
I think it's probably more the second thing, but I'm sure it's a huge disappointment because last year in this game, LAFC played really poorly. I didn't think they played poorly in this one. They just played a Sounders team that was, I mean, this game from the Sounders was almost impeccable. And I mean, the fact is that LAFC just got outplayed, and the decision making part of it for LAFC it revolves around Rossi and Rodriguez, who weren't on the field tonight, but are important players and potentially $20 million sales overseas. And I think you probably have to take that and then start again with a different left winger. But then the real one for me is Atuesta. Because they were helpless this year when Atuesta was hurt and not available. When he got back healthy again, granted, I mean, they never hit the heights that they did last year, but they were a really good team the last month and a half, 2 months of the season. So they have to figure out if he's going to go. And if he does go, they have to figure out how to replace him. Because it wasn't like Carlos Vela wasn't the MVP of the team in terms of value. Right? The most valuable player for how LAFC wanted to play was Atuesta. And so that is a huge, that's the huge decision they have to make this winter, because we can all see it. Atuesta is a brilliant player and he has a lot of interest from teams in La Liga and Serie A in particular. And they're going to get an offer at some point that they probably have to say yes to.
And that's the future of this league, we hope.
Yeah.
Right? Is young players coming, performing, elevating their teams, and then those teams being in a position where they have to make tough decisions and they have to balance, you know, the income side, the success first team side, as well as the ambitions of their players that you don't want to stand in the way of. I mean, this is in a lot of ways a really disappointing year for LAFC because of the Vela injury, because of what everyone went through, because the results just weren't at the level that they had last year where it seemed like, oh my God, juggernaut. Like, this is going to be the team that seizes MLS and becomes the it team. And yet here we are again talking about the Seattle
Sounders. Take the Golden Boot winner out of any team.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And then take your Golden Boot winner from last year and give them 90 minutes of run before you get to your first round matchup to go on the road against the defending champs. Then take out two center midfield. Then take out a left. Like, to go through that, and yes, I know Sounders missed Arriaga and Svensson, but to me, I'm like, yeah, I just think this game came too early for LAFC. If they wouldn't have given up that 90th minute goal on the last day on decision day, and they had a different matchup to begin this playoffs, and they got the Sounders in round two or round three even, I think LAFC could have won that match. There's no doubt about it to me that LAFC could have gone on to that and gone on to win MLS Cup. That's how small the margins are, especially this year, and how important I think every year MLS playoffs are about form, fitness around playoffs. Every year is a long slog. This year literally went in 20-minute spurts. It was 20 minutes to start, 20 minutes in the middle, a break, another start, another stop, another start, and international play threw a wrench in things as well. So for LAFC, I just felt like it was just the wrong day of the week, and the guys just were not at full strength to even try and do this. That's why I thought Sounders, I picked Sounders ahead, but I was like, if LAFC could get past this match, we might be saying the exact same thing about them of, are they now the favorites for MLS Cup? Because I felt like this match was, that's partly why it was so highly anticipated, was whoever came out of this was likely one to go on and potentially go all the way.
Well, for LAFC, it's not over, the trophy chase.
Yeah.
CONCACAF Champions League. You might have forgot about days. It. We did it, but it's coming up after MLS Cup in December. So prepare for that one.
Get Rossi, get Rodriguez, get Palacios healthy, win CCL,
right.
Make MLS history, and then have Bob Bradley come drop the mic right at the final. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm here for that.
That's the narrative we all need.
Now, I'm also here for Seattle Dallas from last playoffs to be reincarnated in this playoffs.
Do you remember the Walker Zimmerman game too in 2016? I think it was on mm-hmm. Seattle's way. That was one of the best playoffs
with the PK
where you've ever seen. Yeah. Dempsey, I think, got a red card against Dallas one time. That's where Mauro Diaz got injured. These two clubs always find each other over the last 5 years, and there's always fireworks, and it's always awesome.
Tuesday, FS1, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, Fox Deportes, TSN, TVA. Of course, MLSsoccer.com, your home for all the information, all the listings, everything you need to know ahead of these playoff matchups. What are we thinking about? What's different this year, Doyle, than last year? What are the big storylines? What are the matchups? What's the managerial sort of head-to-head?
For Seattle versus Dallas?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, sorry. I think the head-to-head aspect of it is going to be, does Dallas feel comfortable dropping everybody behind the ball? Because the only time Seattle really, really struggled this year when they had a full team was against Portland, when Portland scored an early goal and then just said, okay, we're going to bunker. We're going to put everybody in the box and go ahead and try to beat us. And Seattle's only way of trying to beat that was crossing the ball 45 times. I mean, they literally crossed the ball 45 times right into the thick of a Portland bunker the last time these two teams played. Dallas are a really good defensive team. I think that their best chance is going to be doing exactly that. So I expect Dallas to just bunker and counter, and it's going to be on, the onus is going to be on Seattle to carry the game.
Kalen doesn't want it.
No, okay. they're going to play, because look what they did last year in the playoffs against Seattle. I went to Dallas,
different team,
but I went to Dallas before they went and played that match. And I remember talking to Lucci about, he was talking about, you know, are we going to sit back and go, or are we going to actually try and go head to head? And they went toe-to-toe. And yes, everybody remembers the LAFC-Seattle match as sort of the pinnacle match of the playoffs last year leading to MLS Cup. But nobody gave them a tougher task than that Dallas team in that first round. And so if you've gone there and done that, and then you've gone against Portland on the road and beat them.
But they didn't come out and play them. They bunkered in against Portland. They waited them out. They brought Pepe on late. They scored a late goal and won in penalty kicks.
Dallas didn't do anything for 75 minutes in that game.
Here's what I would like to see. I would like to see them start Pepe and Tessman and put both of them from the start and play aggressive.
And play your kids guy.
Kalen cares about his young Americans.
I thought they deserved it.
Yeah. And getting played.
Yeah.
Look at their based on their performance, I feel like those two deserved it. And you ride the hot hand. I think those kids are ready. They've proven neither of them looked overawed by any of the situation. And I'm just, as a fan, that's who I want to see go against Sounders. I want to see these two teams go head to head.
Just for the homies, I have to mention Raul Ruiz Diaz, golden boot watch for the homie Rodrigo, the Peruvian squad. I don't know why he keeps telling me to say that, but he told me I had to say it on the show. So I said it.
I didn't understand that at all. Yeah. Didn't know where that was going or why it was going there. But I do want to see as much Ricardo Pepi as possible in these playoffs. So we'll see if we get that on Tuesday. Seattle,
former
Dallas.
ETR host Ricardo Pepi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he did kind of. He came
was here for the intro. He was a partner in soccer. Exactly. Once you're a partner in soccer,
you know what? I will officially, he is a partner in soccer. He can have that title, no doubt about it. Tuesday, so they get a little bit of a rest. It's a full week for them as opposed to the Eastern Conference, which I guess based on when they play, they do get a full week too. It's late. We're figuring this out as we go. New England, six times the charm. Hey, four losses and a draw. Doesn't matter. They can have the shield. The Union can. New England are marching on.
We gotta like Skype Charlie in for this Eastern Conference segment. Like both matches, we gotta just like get him, throw him in real quick.
Was this the fifth game? Producer Anders is correcting
me. Fifth game, yes. It was 3 wins and a draw for Philly going.
I was trusting Bruce Arena's numbers, and I got it. You know, Bruce didn't know. He was
Bruce is always liberal.
He's not an analytics guy. Yeah. Analytics is for people who don't know how to watch soccer.
Exactly. Well, you know, he's how many goals did he go in the back of the net? 2. Mm-hmm. How many goals did the Union score? None. We're moving on. Bruce Arena, the New England Revolution. By the way, Bruce mic'd up in this game was like the low-key awesome. Star of the whole thing. And he wasn't keeping it. It wasn't like complicated, Kalen. He was very straightforward in what he was telling his players. He wasn't messing around.
Well, I mean, everybody, we were joking about the analytics and all that, but I really do think that the playoffs really come down to small margins. And that's a cliche and everybody says it, but it comes down to a little bit of, you know, can you finish your chance, and minimizing risk at set pieces, by the way. They got on top of that one. But yeah, even a lot of the information that he was giving was like, win a tackle, put a foot in. Play it back to the keeper. Don't just boot it. Like, keep possession. Like, these are very simple things, but they add up. And in any playoff match I've played in, it's you think the ball's going out of bounds. There's a little 50-50 tackle, as we just saw right there, that was lost. That's the difference between your season is over, so congratulations, you got the supporter shield, and that's it. It's over. And so I thought it was actually really interesting to listen to Bruce, you know, sort of yelling at his own team for most of the match from the sideline, and kind of riding them. He was a very, you know, he was on it, and none of the conversation was super abstract or complicated. It was really about trying to make sure you take care of the little details and making sure those guys did, and they did.
Big picture, how did they do it? I mean, it's set pieces. Somebody's got to mark Adam Buksa. I mean, so I don't know how he got free, but he peeled off somebody and he was wide open basically at the 6, easy header. And then Covey-Seal creates chances and Tejan Buchanan left Kai Wagner, you know, I don't know.
Back but in the like, whole game, we talked about Roldan and Jordan Morris, their improvement. Tejan Buchanan played right back for the first time in his career 4 days ago.
This is what I would imagine Kalen would have looked like at right back, by the way.
But last game, he found the right spot.
Tam contract coming for Kalen.
Let's go.
Kalen just wants young American and Canadian.
Tejan's from, he's from Brampton, I think. Yep. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, Brampton kid's going to step up in a big game.
You know, Brampton always. Kalen and Brampton, it's like, you know, peas in a pod there.
He also went to Syracuse, and you know, they always step up in big games.
Check out that movement episode.
Boo.
David, I stepped on your bit. What were you saying? Sorry.
I was just saying his improvement from one game to two games at that position, because he filled the right spots last game. He missed on almost every cross. He didn't make the right decision. He looked a little tentative in the final third, got hurt, came off. And this game, I mean, he beats Kai Wagner and scores the goal. Great. But besides that, he filled the spots again. And Gustavo Bo is always going to float. And Carlos Heel's going to pick up that space sometimes. But otherwise, whoever's playing right back has to fill that channel and has opportunities to. And that's what they wanted from Buchanan last time. And they got it from him today. And I just think the step up from two games within a space of 4 days is impressive from that young player.
Go ahead, Weeby.
No, I was going to say, if you have something on Buchanan, throw it in there, because I was going to turn us to the Union, because I know we're going to celebrate the Revs and we're going to preview that and talk about them. But this is the Supporters Shield winners that went out with like less than a whimper in a lot of ways.
Well, let me show you how, because we painted up a couple of clips. And when you're playing a team in the 4-4-2 diamond, which is what the Union play, you have to blow up the diamond. You have to make it defend wide. And this is what the Revs did. That's Matt Polster, a central midfielder, dropping all the way to touchline. This is Carlos Heel, who is a winger. Nobody goes with him. Nobody puts pressure on the ball, and that allows the Revs to run in behind. Now, Mark McKenzie makes a play right here, but it puts the Revs in a position where they can immediately press and make it difficult for the Union to play out. They turn the ball over. They win a set piece. After this is taken, Adam Buksa puts it in the back of the net. Now, here's the second goal. Again, the Revs make them defend wide. They've drawn 4 Union players over to the sideline. That allows Heel to slip inside and become a 10. Remember, he's a winger, and that gives all that room to Buchanan for the overlap, puts Kai Wagner in a position where he has to make a play, and he does not. So it's all about the Revs blowing up the Union shape. I love the diamond midfield, but like if you allow your opponent to make you wide while you're playing a diamond, then it's just like Kuva, man. It's not going to work out for you. And then the other one is winning your individual duels. The Revs got a masterpiece from Carlos Hill, 2 assists. Bo was quiet, but they got a goal from Adam Buksa. Those are their DPs. What did Philadelphia's best Union best players do? They didn't, like, Brendan Aaronson basically didn't show up for this game. Shabilko was, I mean, he was a non-factor. Jose Martinez was subbed at the half. Alejandro Bedoya had a pretty poor game. That's the story of the playoffs right there. If you have a good tactical plan and then your best players play well, and he's not Ladero level, but he's close, you're going to win the game. And that's what the Revs did, and they deserved it.
What are they thinking in that locker room? Jim Curtin, the Union, Kalen, after having such a massive high? And in some ways, it almost felt like watching this game was like, oh, man, maybe they just were spent after that. Maybe they just didn't have it emotionally, like the desire or whatever it was, because this is not the way we saw the Union play almost the entire year. They would not have won the Supporters' Shield if this was how they played on a regular basis.
Well, can I ask a question first? Because I missed the first 15, 20 minutes because I was watching the other match in extra time. What happened? They were just in a hole to begin with, or did they not come out with the same energy? Like, what happened in the beginning of this match?
Philly came out and they had an early chance from Montero. And once he missed that, it looks like their shoulders slumped a little bit. I don't know if it was shoulder slumping, but it was almost like, okay, we'll find more. Don't worry about it. And like, they didn't play with enough. I mean, it's a cliche, but they didn't seem to have the same amount of intensity that the Revs did. And the Revs were able to jump on that and control the game. And once they were able to control the game, they were able to make that midfield big and wide and find space for guys like Heal especially. And that was a ball game.
I will say Ben Bear put this out there on Twitter. Shout out to the legend, Baron T. And he compared it to the Red Bulls from 2015-16 of you have your model that you play all regular season and it will create chances at some point and you know it'll work. And the playoffs are so different. And the Red Bulls were never able to figure out how to win the small, big moments and change things at the right time. And Kalen, you know better than anyone, in the playoffs, it's just about winning a certain specific battle and that one moment to get you over the edge because it's just one game. And that's kind of what Philly looked like, which we didn't expect because of what they did last year and because of the way they finished this year. It felt like the young guys or whatever it was, the group in general, understood the intensity needed to win these moments and what this would mean. And it sounded like Cazale Moreno and Adrian Healy referenced their conversations with Jim Curtin this week a few times, that Jim Curtin was worried about this, about the layoff, about playing a team that was coming off short rests, which we didn't know how it would be handled, the play-in game. But we've seen over the course of MLS history, because it used to be play-in game into a two-leg series, that teams ride that momentum and that hot hand and feel that playoff intensity, that Philly just never was able to match that. And to Doyle's point, I think it's confidence in the group that they weren't worried or panicked or rushing at any point until the 75th, 80th minute. But you have to recognize at some point that you're playing at an average level down 2-0 in a playoff game, and they never did.
And I would also say that New England's best players are just better than Philly's. If you have the three best players on the field, you're probably going to be the favorites.
But Doyle, you're coming out there. I saw you earlier on Twitter and you're saying, I'm doing my head in. I'm like, you're like, oh, well, this team would have been the Supporters' Shield. They were always the better team. And I'm like, wait a minute.
I didn't say they would win the Supporters' Shield. I said that the Revs, with a fully healthy Revs team, would be favorites for me because they're more talented over a fully healthy Philadelphia team.
Full more roster talented or just the match winners?
I think it's more talented. 1 through 14, maybe. I think Philly can maybe go 1 through 20 a little bit better. And that's the thing. You need 1 through 25, really, to win a Supporters' Shield. You need a certain mentality to win a Supporters' Shield. Being able to bring that week after week as a fan, as someone who has spent time in the stands, that is the most wonderful thing, to give your fans 8 straight months of great soccer. See, it's baby girl. She's a supporter of Steel Truth.
You guys, the Rez just tweeted out all four of our brackets in a picture together, and all four of us picked against them.
Shout out to Willie. He's like watching this right now, probably just like, I'm about to spike them.
Good for those guys. Good for those.
Doyle, I thought you said you picked the Revs.
I thought I had picked the Revs.
Listen to that. You can't trust a word that Doyle says about his picks from now until forever. He just is very convenient.
He's a cat oil salesman.
Exactly.
Weeby, I will say, I didn't see the beginning of the match, but I do think if you look at the Eastern Conference and you look at Toronto FC, and you look at the Union today, those were the teams that had to go against teams that had already played a play-in match. And I've played in play-in matches, not exactly play-ins with 8-10 teams in the playoffs, but you get that first match and you get that playoff sweat and you get a 95th minute Gustavo Bo winner, or you get a 3-0 win at home. And it gives you a different sense heading into that next match. And I don't care if you won on decision day, that could feel like a lifetime ago. And I don't care if you've been undefeated at home, you haven't played a match in a little while. And another team has played in a do or die situation. So I don't think, I've always felt this way in past years, in formats, in home and away legs, it doesn't matter. I think sometimes when you, a very dangerous team, and we saw this in the Eastern Conference, and it didn't exist in the West, was that if you would have seen San Jose maybe play a play-in match to get in, could that have maybe given them a little bit of that small edge to get over Sporting Kansas City? Or if you would have seen, you know, Colorado win that first match before they went into Minnesota, would they have been a little bit sharper in front of net? Maybe that would have made a little bit of a difference. And I think we saw that in the Eastern Conference, where the teams with the higher seeds, yes, great, congratulations, you've had a great season, you've won the Supporters Shield, but you didn't play in a situation where every single pass could have been the end of your season, and the other team just did. Or you didn't get over the top of that and win in a situation where you were able to get through a match that had those type of stakes and you were ready from it from the jump. So I didn't see the first 15 minutes match of the Philly game, but when you look at overall, I think those play-in matches clearly gave those teams some type of momentum heading into this round.
Just felt a little bit to me like Philly were spent. There was a lot that was sort of put into that Shield run, and in particular, the final day of the regular season, decision day, and the win that they had to get and the win that they got and sort of the celebrations afterwards and the feeling of accomplishment. And I'm not saying they like laid down, rolled over and said, we made it, it's all good now. I'm just saying they weren't prepared. They weren't as prepared as the Revs were. Before we get to Matt Turner and what he thought about this game and the Revs' chances going forward, what did this loss mean for the 2020 Union season? How will they sort of compartmentalize and contextualize their accomplishments, but also ultimately this failure with a huge opportunity?
I think there's a few ways this can go. One is, a lot of times you look at errors, and like when we talk about the Sounders, right, in this time period, you don't specifically hit on the wins and losses. It's the trophies overall of this group and generation. Mark McKenzie and Brendan Aaronson are gone, and you don't know what other pieces are coming back. If this is it for Philly, then it's this massive opportunity missed, because they won Supporters Shield, but they could have made an MLS Cup run. If they bring through Paxton Aaronson and Jake McGlynn and whoever else, and Jacob Glessness takes over as the dominant center back, and they continue to take steps, and they're competitive and winning trophies over the next 3-4 years, I think it's the start of a golden generation. Like for Toronto, making MLS Cup in 2016 was such a huge deal. We don't really point on the fact that they lost it, because then they won next year, and doubles and trebles and all that stuff. So those are the ways it could go for Philly, because I still think the soccer they played this year will stand out forever at a high level. And what they did as a club, with their ethos, with what they wanted to be and the way they played, they will always remember. And I think we will always remember. I don't think it'll go down as an opportunity missed, because I think they're going to continue to be competitive.
We'll see what happens with Mark McKenzie. We know that this was it for Brendan Aaronson in Philadelphia. We don't know what will happen with the Revs, though. We talked to Matt Turner earlier tonight. Let's take a listen. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Matt Turner got the zero. Got the win. 6 times the charm for the Revs, right? This is the one that mattered. Who cares about those regular season games?
Well, that's what they say, right? That's how the saying goes. No, it felt good. Philly had a great year. obviously they had our number all season, but we'll take this. We'll use it as we move forward, and we'll keep going, hopefully to the cup.
One of the things we all thought would be a huge factor is this short layoff while the top two seeds were going to be able to rest and get ready. Both the top two seeds lost tonight. How did we get that so wrong? Was it energy? Was it flow? What went right?
Didn't even know that about the other results. I'm just finding out now. Nashville beat Toronto.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. Penalties or what? Regular time.
Extra time. Regular time. Kind of dominated.
Extra time. Wow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they've got some healthy guys. I think, you know, I touched on this in some of my pregame interviews, but having that playing game is somewhat helpful because you don't have as much of a break, and you get the win, and Nashville got theirs in dominating fashion. We got ours in sort of like extra time, stoppage time, magic fashion. And that sort of builds your team's confidence, and you start feeling good, and you start getting the good feelings and good vibes, and you're in that playoff mindset sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was really helpful for us, especially coming into tonight. We already played in a win or go home game, and Philly hadn't played since they played us on a day where it didn't even actually end up mattering if they beat us or not. So that's what I feel about that.
How is the vibe different when you have a guy like Carlos in the team, like now settled in the team?
Oh, you see how much of a difference he makes. The guy is just a really, really good player. Anytime he's on the ball, guys know that he can find them, so they can make creative runs. They can feel free to float around. They know, like for me, if he's checking to the ball, I know I can give it to him. It's really hard to get him off the ball. So he's our leader. He's a great captain. He's a guy that everybody respects and loves, and he sort of rallies the troops. So he was holding us all to a really high standard for tonight, and we got the job done.
What does this mean for you? We joked about it before the interview started. You had a lot of friends and family. You're a New Jersey native in the crowd. And on top of that, I know every player says they don't hear it, but you were one of the tops for goalkeeper of the year. Andre Blake won that award. You get the shutout in this playoff win. What does this whole day mean to you?
Andre had a great season. He was my vote for goalkeeper of the year, for the record. And what I will say is, it feels really, really good to win tonight. It really does. That's the first time I've ever beaten Philadelphia in anything. I've never beaten Philly. I came here. It was the only MLS team to really give me like one of those trials before the combine. And it didn't go very well for me. I was outside. I was outside the stadium the whole time playing on the pitch out there. So this is where I made my MLS debut. I lost 2-0 in that game, but is where I made my debut. And this is where I got my first win over them. My first win, I'll call it my first playoff win because that was technically a play-in round. So tonight's a special night. My friends and family, my girlfriend, everybody was there. That matters. And if they weren't, I felt the love. And it was just a really special night for me.
Bruce, I think, said in the post game that after that second goal, you guys kind of broke their spirit. How did you see this game play out in sort of the nitty gritty from that position back there, sort of bird's eye view?
Yeah, I mean, that was probably one that I've played much better games and not gotten a clean sheet in my career. So Farrell and Kessler were immense. I think they sort of started running out of ideas and scrambling. They're not used to playing from behind. They're usually on the front foot playing from ahead. So it was really great for us to be able to build ourselves a lead, and not only a lead, a little bit of a cushion. So got ourselves the win, the ability to advance down to Orlando, back to the bubble. And what I saw was just a bunch of guys, 10 guys in front of me, just battling for each other. Anytime somebody got laid into a cheap tackle, cheap foul, we were all rallying around, and it was just a great performance.
I'm not going to get you on the cheap tackles. There was a lot going on in that last final moments of the game, but you mentioned Orlando. That's the next step. It doesn't end. It gets harder and harder in the MLS playoffs. What do you see in that matchup against them?
Another team that never won in Orlando. We've conceded a fair amount of goals while going down there. So Oscar has got them playing really good football. They got some good strikers up top, obviously Nani. And I watched that game against New York, but we'll take time tonight just to enjoy this, and then we'll look at their tape, we'll look at the film, and we'll we'll get ourselves ready. And I know that they have Daryl DK and they got a bunch of guys. So it'll be a great game and a great matchup and a great test for us.
You're being responsible. You have the mask. So we can't see your face when you said you watched that game. please just tell me what you thought about that penalty kick shootout and give us your best goalkeeper on goalkeeper evaluation of Rodrigo Schlegel.
Oh my goodness. I was watching that game in my apartment and I just couldn't believe what was going on. I really couldn't believe it. Poor Galese. I mean, I feel for him. I feel like guys have come off their line a lot more than that and gotten repercussions, but you know, the refs made the call. They made the call and it's a yellow card. You can't reverse it. And that's that. So we'll take that as an advantage going into Sunday. Cause he's been good for them all season. So yeah, we're really looking forward to that game.
He resisted the evaluation of Rodrigo Schlegel.
Smart.
His form. Yeah, sorry, I forgot. Give me, like, if you see his form, like his crouch, his hand positioning. Yeah.
All I'll say is his penalty save percentage is better than mine.
Yeah.
One for two. So
yeah, he's Tim Melia-esque. That's what he is. Congratulations to the Revs. Congratulations to you, Matt. Shutout in your second playoff win. We're counting that other one. Right. Enjoy your night and good luck against Orlando.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thanks so much.
Oh, great stuff from Matt Turner. According to Dave, who was in the comments section during that interview, Revs fans are feeling it tonight. Well, they have an opportunity. They're going to Orlando, ABC on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern. That's a big one. No Pedro Gallese. They tried to get that red card overturned. They appealed. It did not get appealed. Oh, it did get appealed. It did not get overturned, I should say. So Pedro Gallese will not play. Brian Rowe will come in. Or Rodrigo Schlegel if they go to PKs, depending on what they want to do. How much does that hurt Orlando? Feels like it hurts them quite a bit. He is a game-changing player for them. What do we think? Does that change the ceiling Orlando has? Does it make you doubt them at all ahead of this game? Does it open up something for the Revs?
Did you see Gaia say in
the first half? One of the greatest performances.
That's what we call an alley-oop. That was like, I put it to your foot on the six. You're just supposed to just tap it in and be like, they're going to miss Gaia say. He was incredible. He is a game-changing player. He's like the Stephen Fry of the Eastern Conference. That's what you were supposed to say. I tried to help you out, but I understand that I, like, in the process, made myself very dunkable, and so you dunked on me. So I appreciate that. So what now?
No, David has a look in his eye like he has something to say.
What's this game say to you? When you think about this match on Sunday, what do you hope for? What do you think about?
I'm worried about Orlando because of Gallese. And I think if there's a path forward, and they probably want to hear this, but I thought once they went a man down, they actually played a little bit more responsible. And, you know, they were able to keep the ball, but pick their moments to go forward. And I think when I look at Orlando sort of overall, I think sometimes they get a little bit caught up in the end-to-end stuff. And that was not, I don't think that's their best version of their team. They can play beautiful soccer. They can keep possession. They can switch it side to side. They can stretch teams. They can move them around. But I think ultimately where they're best at is using their counterattack and pace on the wings to get in behind and then finding combination play through DK and doing exactly the same. And I just think without Gallese, I think that it's that safety valve of, you know, look at the ridiculous saves he was making throughout that match. And that changes the way you actually have to play. You can't just depend on him to come up with one or two of those to keep you in a match. So I'm a little bit nervous for them. I think they're going to have they've had a crazy emotional ride and they're going forward. And I think they have the quality to do it, but I think they should probably take a more defensive stance, be a little bit more compact and try to hit on the break.
So Kalen, I agree with everything you said. But to me, what stood out was the front three against NYCFC all played poorly.
Yep.
DK was a non-factor. Chris Mueller got a ton of 1v1 opportunities, did zero. And Nani, outside of the penalty kick that he scored, not the one he missed, he did nothing. So that, to me, is if they can raise their game to the level that they should play at, this team could be good enough to lose Gallese for this one and still get through. But if they play the way they did against NYCFC, then this is a team that has no chance of getting through against the Revs. A Revs team that's playing with a healthy Carlos Heel the way they've played the last two games.
And the other point I will make is no Juan as well. And it seems like no Joao Moutinho That's both your starting fullbacks. Joao Moutinho, when he went out, this team changed. They were no longer able to actually be that sort of free-flowing, using the ball to break you down team that they were throughout the month of July and into early August at the MLS's back tournament. I think their ceiling is lower, but I also think it kind of simplifies for them. I think that Orlando City, Oscar Pereja, again, I've said this before, we love Oscar Pereja's teams at their best because they will play that beautiful soccer and use the ball, but also he's super pragmatic, and if he doesn't think that's going to get him the win, he will put everybody behind the ball and say, okay, we're going to defend it and we're going to counter. Orlando City were doing that for a lot of the end part of the season in September and October especially. I suspect that that's what we're going to see in this one. That he's going to put the onus on the Revs to possess the ball and to break them down. And if you do that and you have players like Daryl DK, Chris Mueller, and of course Nani, you can be really, really dangerous. But the margins are really thin. And we saw it today from the Revs. When they're going really well and they can get all those guys into the attack, they can pull you apart and they can make it hurt.
ABC Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, Orlando, New England. Put it on your TV, put it on your mom's TV, stream it somewhere, put it on everything. Let's get a big rating. I say at 1:48 Eastern Time a.m. just to see it, just because I want to see it on ABC. All right. Nashville fans are, I think, asleep, if I had to guess, given they're on Eastern Time and it's almost 2, because I don't see them in the YouTube comments railing against us for not talking about their team and saying you still don't give us respect.
Is Nashville in Eastern Time?
Are they? I mean, I told somebody in Michigan the other day that they were not in Eastern Time, and he was like, you don't know geography.
Michigan's on the line. Michigan split.
Like, I thought Michigan was the Midwest, and I didn't. No. So I'm trying to
play. Indiana, you're such a coastal elite.
Exactly. Indiana is split. I know that because of Carly Fiction.
Indiana, is that a state or is that in the Caribbean?
Now, like us, you're more confused about the time zones than you were before this started. So let's jump into it, man.
Nashville confirms I was correct. Okay, continue.
Nashville's crescendo, let's say, because you know we have to make a musical reference here, is building. It was slow. It was steady. There were some doubts that, I don't know, certain analysts and pundits had, certainly none of us, about what they would be able to do and what their peak was, because their attacking side was, frankly, pretty quiet for a long time. And it was quiet in this game due to offside calls and due to missed chances for a while. But they got their goal against Toronto. They end up winning the game. And they're into the conference semifinals, where I don't think anybody really would have picked them. I don't care what you said in preseason, Dave. I know you're going to bring up that I didn't have any faith, and you said they were going to be better than Miami. But you did not think, you would have never said that they were going to be in the conference semifinals beating Toronto FC. I just don't believe it. It wasn't in your bracket. It's not real life. You wouldn't have said it. So don't.
This was the team. Let me just say this. Nashville was a team that ended 7th in the Eastern Conference. That would have been the last team into the playoffs last year. So that was where they stood over the course of the season. That is what I kind of thought they might do in the preseason. This is an upset. And it's not like offensive to think a team that's seeded 7th in the postseason is going to lose to a team that's seeded 2nd. We did not invent the idea that they had a worse season and therefore probably wouldn't win this game. To your point of the slow build.
You don't understand social media, man.
Not at all. Not on any level. To your point on the slow build, listen, for an expansion team that's not going to spend like Atlanta, you have to lock in defensively and solidify defensively. FC Cincinnati knew that. They just went out and got a bunch of players that weren't
very good. Did FC Cincinnati know that?
Yes. That is what they tried to do.
Did they just try to do players. That?
Okay. Yes, they had a DP defensive midfielder.
Let's just not talk about FC Cincinnati. Let's not talk about FC.
Yeah, throw them, okay, yeah, they're out.
That is what they tried to do. Mm-hmm. Nashville did it a lot better. They did it with MLS experienced guys in every single one of those spots. And they were able to say, in every game, we will be competitive because it will be close. And then they went out and they signed DP attackers. And it took them what ended up, because the season is ridiculous, 9 months to settle in. And Randall Leal missed a sitter in this one, or an open goal. Mukhtar missed an open goal as well.
Twice.
Ends up creating the goal. Had a great chip that got called off. And then Cadiz got called for 2 offsides, but he's just come in and settled in. But his presence, to me, has opened up the game for Mukhtar to operate underneath him, to find spots, to at least get some confidence. because he never touched the ball in places he wanted to be for the first 6 months of the season. And you never saw a player who believed he could change the game and believed there was opportunities. And now everything's a one-touch layoff and he's turning and he's running at pace at the back line and all those things. And in the end, all of them were able to come together and create a goal. And this is an incredible night for this franchise. This is going to be the moment that stands out. Whatever else happens, I still think to score an extra time against Toronto FC to win a playoff game, this is going to be the year one moment that they talk about and lives on forever going forward.
Look, everybody's been talking about narratives and the way perception goes around Nashville SC this year. And I think it's been almost impossible to judge. It's a brand new team that didn't play in the, let's keep it real, the most visible moment of the MLS season was the MLS's back tournament. And it was the best opportunity that you had to see teams go against everyone, right? Because other than that, they played Inter Miami 12 times this year. It was like really, it's tough to judge everybody against each other this year.
And FC Dallas 100
yeah.
times.
Yeah. And so like, I think Nashville is a team that people are still trying to figure out for the most part. But when you look at them now, and when you look at them in this playoff run, they look like a playoff team. That's why you go out and get a guy like Walker Zimmerman, who won a supporter shield in Dallas, won a supporter shield in LAFC, you know, really helped build that franchise, knows what it's like to take on an expansion team. I would say Dax McCarty did a similar thing in Chicago, which was essentially an expansion team at the time, as far as trying to figure out exactly like who we are and trying to find some identity, and has the MLS experience to do that. And Joe Willis even comes up with a timely savior here and there. Like, he's an experienced vet, knows what he's doing. And I think when you look at we already sort of beat that dead, but like, they went out and got MLS experience and know-how and playoff experience. And then their other pieces are starting to shine. Mukhtar, especially to me, has really emerged.
But in the Philly New England game, what did it come down to? Match winners. And while Nashville has shown better from those guys, Columbus has them. In Zelarayan, in Zardes, you could say.
I wasn't talking about the next matchup yet.
I understand. I'm just saying what Nashville's done is incredible and they should enjoy it. Can you do it four times without one of those guys to fall back on? Because what Philly had was a flat performance, and there isn't that Nico Lodero guy or Vela who steps up by themselves and carries you to a victory. And Nashville needs all 11 to play well. And we compliment that. But what happens in the playoffs is if one or two guys is off, then the whole team falls and you don't have one person to carry you. And so what we'll see from Toronto to Columbus is Asuelo had an off night. Josie was nowhere to be found in this game, as well as Piatti. If Zelarayan and Zardes and Santos and Nagby can play to their level, it'll be fascinating to see if Nashville can get over that hump in the next round.
I think there's some similarities to what Nashville did well in this game to what they'll need to do well against the Crew, which is they got to take away the center of the field. And when they played well, they took that away from Toronto FC. In that like 20-minute span from about the 15th minute to the 35th, Toronto FC started moving them around a little bit, started pushing them side to side, but more so than that, got vertical and got into the gaps. And once they were there, once they moved the ball quickly, they got goal-scoring opportunities. Toronto FC put Nashville on their heels, and Nashville couldn't get out of it. It was Dax McCarty picking up the ball from the back line and just hitting hopeful passes that were intercepted, and then it was right back down their throat. That's what they have to avoid against the Crew. But Herman Zafera hit us up with this stat, or hit the whole world up via Twitter, and he's a legend. Everybody knows him from U.S. soccer days, all up and down that pyramid with U.S. soccer, as well as with the Rapids. Gary Smith's teams are now 6-1 in the MLS Cup playoffs, 5-0 in single elimination. I know it's a small sample size. I know it's an MLS Cup winner in that Colorado Rapids team that went all the way.
Diaz level numbers right there.
But like, this style, pragmatic, make sure your back line, make sure the foundation is good, get a couple moments from your attackers, march on. That's worked for Gary Smith. Will it keep working? We shall find out. But for the second straight show, we're talking to Dax McCarty. That's just the way it works. When they win, Dax comes on extra time. Let's take a listen. We'll be right back to break it down with Nashville and finish off with Toronto FC and send you off into the night, or if you're listening to the day, wherever you're going. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Once again, we're talking to Dax McCarty. Once again, Nashville SC are victorious. Once again, man. I don't even know what to say anymore. Well done. Congratulations. How does it feel?
Thanks, guys. Feels wonderful, obviously. It's one thing to, I think, win a playoff game at home with in front of some of your fans and playing another expansion team, and maybe you jump on top of them. Obviously, they were missing some players, but it's a whole another thing altogether to come play, in my estimation, probably the best, if not second best, first best, whatever, team in MLS for the past 5 years in terms of consistency, in terms of championship mentality, in terms of just overall quality our league has seen. To come in and win the game on the road against them, and not just win the game, but in my opinion, like, be fully deserved to win the game is a statement from us, and I'm really proud of our group.
So you said it right there, I think, best. You come into this building, on expected goals, you dominated this game. On regular goals, you also won this game. You always believe you're going to win. Did you see it playing out this way?
Yeah, honestly, we did. We knew that they were such a good team. We knew that they were going to have their opportunities, and we knew that we were going to have to be really sharp and take advantage of our opportunities if we were going to win this game. But I think in the first half, we maybe showed them a little bit too much respect. We didn't press them as well as we wanted to. But that's also down to how good of a team they are. I mean, guys like Pasuelo and Josie and Michael, they run you ragged if your pressing isn't good enough. So Joe Willis, massive save in the first half, kept us in the game. Second half rolls around. We start to just wrestle back control of the game and just start creating chance after chance. And once we were doing that, I was really confident we were going to get a goal. And I just didn't know when that was going to be.
Walk me through the game plan, Dax, because we've talked about on this show, and everybody has really, about Nashville's style of play. But you said it there. I thought the only time you guys were troubled was when they started pinging the ball around and they found the gaps in the middle because they moved you a little bit. Other than that, you really routed them where they wanted them to go, it seemed like. And then you had the chances. Walk us through what you expected and what you wanted this game to be.
Yeah, the first half, I think, got away from us a little bit. I think that, like I said, we showed them a little bit too much respect, and they actually they were having too much joy with Michael being able to sit in between the center backs and pick out passes to guys coming into pockets. Guys like De Leon, Piatti, and Pozuelo were giving us trouble. We were getting pushed back on top of our box a little bit too much. I think once we figured out how to press a little bit better, once the ball went out to one of their center backs, either Mavinga or Omar, that was a trigger for us to go and step higher up the field, me or Brian Anunga in the middle, try to get a little bit closer to Michael. And so we really squeezed them so they didn't have any outlets. Was a really good tactical shift from us in the second half. And I personally, guys, I don't know what it looked like, but I felt like they got tired. And I felt like as the game went on, we just kept pushing and kept pushing. And we kept running, and we just wanted to keep putting them under pressure. And finally, the dam broke. We knew if we kept putting pressure on them, we would score.
We talked about it a little bit last game. It was the first time you had the three attacking DPs on the field together. I thought this game, you saw Cadiz get the chances, but I thought Hani Mukhtar was really unlocked by what Cadiz can do. Doesn't get the goal, but basically got it for you. What have you seen from him growing into this league? And can he be the 10 DP that you guys need?
Yeah, for sure. I think having those two guys out there, it gives everyone a little bit of a lift. And sometimes, you know, you can tell that connection is still growing, right? I mean, I think it's going to take a little bit of time for them to get completely on the same page. I think Yonder might have to reread what the offside rule is that were called for back for offside, especially the one I flicked to him. I would have liked an assist to go with my goal. But for the most part, those are your difference makers. Those are why you go out and sign players like that, so they can change games and win games for you. And I mean, look, we obviously, people have described us as a defensive team, and that's fine. We take pride in that. We know that we're going to limit opponents to very few chances a game. If our attacking players can just turn the screw a little bit and be a little bit more ruthless, and really put other teams to the sword when we create chances like we did, we're going to be a really tough team to knock out of this playoffs.
I know they want to get you out of here, Dax. We have to ask you about the crew. You said it there. In my mind right now, and I'm thinking maybe I was just wrong about the build, this is more of a slow motion crescendo that's getting big at the end at the right time. What do you see in Columbus? What do you see in the opportunity in front of you?
Yeah, no rest for the weary. I mean, we go from, for my money, one of the best teams in the league over the last 5 years to what I think is one of the best teams in the league this year. I think that when they have all their bodies healthy, Columbus is as good as any team in this league. So it's going to be another huge challenge, another huge task. We went there earlier this year and we lost. I actually thought we didn't play too bad. We just gave up, I think, some pretty poor goals in transition. So we respect the hell out of Columbus. We know they're well coached and they've got difference makers in Giassi. Zellerion and Darlington is a guy that we're going to have to try to limit. But for the most part, I think that was still when we were finding a little bit of ourselves and trying to find a rhythm. We're a different team now. We are growing in confidence. I think that you guys can see it. We can feel it on the field. And so we're going to go there fully expecting to put them into a really tough game. And again, try to keep this momentum going and win the game. That's what it's all about.
In money time, 2 wins for Nashville. Congratulations, Dax. Have a good night, man.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, man. It's been a night. It is 2:03 a.m. Dax McCarty, I'm sure, settling in on a flight home, preparing for a conference semifinal for Nashville. Toronto FC, meanwhile, they're going home. And, I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to feel good about that, but it might feel good to know that you're going to be in your own bed for a while. We mostly have talked about Nashville and what they accomplished, but if you look at any of these teams, Canadian teams this year, what they went through really was more than unprecedented. They had a bigger load than everybody else because of the crossing the border, because of where they were forced to be as far as training, what they could do once they went back into market. I mean, I heard that Toronto FC had to get an exemption just to go to the training complex in Canada. I mean, it's such a huge weight. In some ways, I'm not going to say they felt relieved because they're competitors. They want to win this thing. But it just felt like the ask got to be too much. I mean, the last month or so, you saw him fall off. Alejandro Pozuelo was just at a level that nobody else was at for a long, long time. And then Toronto FC, it just seemed that they tapered off. And in this game, they didn't show us much, to be honest with you. It's not the vintage stuff that we expected from them.
I agree. But I will say, on the last day of the season, they had a legitimate chance to win the supporter shield.
Yeah.
That's through pretty, all of that. Through all of that.
And like, I'm not denigrating their season. They
did incredible things. I know you're not.
In the face of incredible odds.
I'm only reinforcing your point. I'm only reinforcing that they had to go through all of those things where, you know, they had to make all these decisions, whether do we go back for 2 days to visit my wife and kids, and we can't train, and how does that impact our injured players and treatment and getting people healthy for the next match and quarantining and all that crazy stuff that you had to do. And then you also go down to just the uniqueness of this playoff circumstance where it's like, yes, they lost tonight, you know, but what would it be like if you go to BMO Field and we've all been there and it's packed and it's jumping and you're in Toronto and it's cold and this is where they've lifted trophies. It's just a different picture overall. And I'm not making excuses for them. I'm not saying that, you know, they played their best or that they didn't, you know,
but it's a pretty good excuse when you're playing in Connecticut on a field that, like, everybody after the game said, like, this wasn't the best. Like, it was a tough field to play on,
which again, probably hurt them more than Nashville because of the things they wanted to do in this
their
game.
Home field is in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Like, what?
That's no just, one would ever want to be caught dead doing
God,
anything.
Not
in Connecticut.
But they also found some good pieces. Io, break, you know, big season
Steve
for him.
Burgers.
Richie also steps forward. I mean, they had, and Pozuelo, I think more than anything, really emerged as sort of the, like, I mean, he was already, but the brain of the team and that central piece. But I think it became uniquely difficult for some of their older players. And Toronto is a team of veteran players where, you know, they missed Justin Morrow tonight. They missed, you know, Josie wasn't at full health. And for a guy that needs really everything to be right, to be on the pitch and to be healthy. And Michael got hurt at the beginning of the year. And like, that is a different thing where you see a team like Philadelphia that's maybe structured in a different way and the success they had. And the fact that it came down to the final day of the season still to me is impressive.
And you mentioned it a little, but the injuries as well for Toronto. Like, while they started probably their best team today, to an extent, Piatti hadn't started in 6 weeks. Josie hadn't started in, I think, basically the entire season. Michael just came back into the starting lineup. Omar missed a spell. Jonathan Osorio got hurt for a ton of time. Marky Delgado missed the game today. Like, all these players that played today were not anywhere near the level of fitness or sharpness that they wanted them to be. And you saw it, I think, especially with Josie, just when he's on, what he can do in this league. And he was nowhere near that today. And it's going to be fascinating going forward of, you know, Toronto FC's kind of talked about moving on the last few years, but they brought Pasuelo in for Giovinco and kind of like recharged the same group. And it's probably reached its end to an extent. And so what do the next 4 months look like? Toronto FC, I think, is going to be the most fascinating team in this offseason of, do they try again? Because that's what Piatti was, a short-term signing to just try and bring enough in to keep Josie and Michael and Pasuelo going. Or do they totally reset the whole thing? And Greg Vanney is a big part of that, leading this whole spell, and could be headed to LA Galaxy or another team.
Yeah, what's the deal? That's the biggest question of the offseason for them, for me, is what's the deal with his contract?
He's out.
How much do you want to give him, Kalen? Yeah. He'll coach in Barry Premier if you give him enough.
Dude, let me just make a really quick point about Toronto. They going into that 5-0 loss against Philadelphia in late October. Mm-hmm. They were 7-0-1 in their previous eight games, or 7 wins, no losses, one draw in their previous eight games. They're playing the best soccer in the league. Marky Delgado got hurt in that game, that 5-0 loss. Delgado is a super underrated player in this league because he does the same type of stuff that we were talking about Christian Roldan doing. But more than that, it's his defensive work. If your central midfield is Michael Bradley, Jonathan Osorio, Alejandro Pozuelo, you're probably in some amount of trouble defensively, and Toronto were. They missed Marky Delgado a lot tonight. They were doing a really good job of getting their left back forward. It was Richie Larea. Larea couldn't quite wrap his left foot around the ball and get in any sort of useful crosses. Maybe that's different if Justin Morrow is there. But that's what we talk about with the playoffs every year. Somebody gets hurt. You have to have that 1 through 14 or 15, somebody able to step up and play those roles. Toronto didn't quite have that, but that was exacerbated by a couple of decisions, I think, from Greg Vanney. Greg Vanney said, okay, we're going to go with Michael Bradley, even though he hasn't been the same guy in 2020. We're going to go with Josie Altidore, even though Josie hasn't lost a step. He's lost three steps. Left back, I would have played the kid Gallagher. I think he's been really good at left back since he came in on loan from Celtic or Rangers, one of those teams.
I think it's Liverpool, but continue.
Is it Liverpool?
I think maybe so. He's
Scottish, so I assume it's so I think there are some questions to be asked about the personnel from Greg Vanney. There's a lot of questions to be asked about that switch to the 4-4-2 at the 60-minute mark, because Toronto weren't generating a ton of chances at that point, but they weren't allowing anything really. And then as soon as they switched to the 4-4-2, they asked so much more of Bradley and Osorio in central midfield. And that is when Nashville were able to put their foot on the ball and start getting out in transition, start picking pockets of space in between the central midfield and central defense. And they just blew the game open. This was 1-0. It could have been 3 or 4.
We are going to tackle the Jonathan Osorio red card on instant replay tomorrow morning, which is now much closer than I would like it to be. So tune into that on YouTube. We're going to get out of here. It's that time. David Stewart in the YouTube comments is saying, shocked and not shocked to see you dudes still up and giving the people what they want. Well, we're going to sleep now. This is also the podcast that we're releasing ahead of the conference semifinals. So if you don't listen to the podcast, subscribe wherever you listen. You can also watch it on YouTube every single week, Sunday, Orlando, New England, ABC, 3 p.m. Eastern, Columbus, Nashville, ESPN at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's the Eastern Conference. Tuesday, Seattle, Dallas, FS1, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. And Wednesday, SKC, Minnesota, FS1 at 9 p.m. Eastern as we march to MLS Cup.
If you are listening to the podcast, yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, yeah.
We don't acknowledge any of the reason that it's the day, but I like eating food and I like spending time with people. And I watch football once a year, and that's the one day. Also, Club America Chivas on Wednesday night. So that's your Thanksgiving football. You're welcome.
Nicely done.
What U15 game is going on this week?
Oh, well, and on that note,
Kalen,
we're out of here.
A year ago, I watched that game. You laugh at me.
No,
now
you're
Christian
right.
Torres is playing an MLS.
Listen,
Jaquiel Marshall Ruddy on Toronto FC, a 15-year-old on a pro deal. You laugh at me, and now they're playing in the playoffs.
I don't know. Everybody wants us to say something like Nashville SC is massive. They've been yelling that in the comments section. So there you go. I said it. Enjoy your week, everybody.
Weeby can be bought.
Zoom with your family. Yeah, Zoom at 2 a.m. I certainly can. Zoom with your families. Enjoy the people you're around. Be responsible. We know we're still in a pandemic. So remember that yourself. We're out of here. We'll see you next Monday to wrap it all up and preview those games in the Western Conference again, I guess. Have a great week. We'll see you then.